pump.
You motherfuckers, let's go.
Attention, please. Attention, please. This shit here feels like a whole entire world collapse. Motherfucker.
Welcome to the Ballcast, boys and girls. Jay Riz and Big Nasty back at it for episode 8, feeling great. Another week of hardcore hoops action has come and gone. Your boys are here to lead you in the clear. Near, what's good, my brother?
Not much, man. I'm just excited for this episode. We got a lot of stuff to talk about.
Oh, it's going to be a good one. You know, we're leaning down close to the comp. Voices are clear. We're ready to roll here. Let's start it off with a little listener feedback. One of our loyal listeners, Josh at a TO, writes in, "At All-Star Weekend, there shouldn't be rookie versus sophomore. There should be the young guns versus the old vets." Nier, what do you think about this idea?
It's a brilliant idea. I mean, the All-Star game, just the whole format has been awful the last few years especially. And, I mean, I don't think I've watched a rookie versus sophomore game since, I can't even remember the last time I saw a game.
Yeah, 10 years ago.
And that's even with all these young players that are super good. And I think it's just because there's no real reason to tune in to watch. You know, you want to watch Kyrie and you watch guys like that, but I don't want to watch, you know, Tristan Thompson and, you know, the other guys that are just there that have to fill the roster.
You don't want to see Alonzo Gee?
No. But this is an incredible idea because I would love to see the, you know, the aging vets go off against these young guns that get all the headlines these days, all the endorsements. You know, a guy like Kobe, a guy like Tim Duncan, they would love to show these little kids what's up.
You know what, let's scrap rookie sophomore, let's scrap the All-Star game itself, because the All-Star game is horrible. There's nothing on the line. East versus West, these guys don't have any pride in the conference that they come from. But if you're representing your age group, you know, veterans versus the new young blood in the league, then pride is on the line. And, you know, the vets could start out a lineup of, you know, J. Kidd, Kobe, Pierce, Garnett, and Duncan. Tell me you wouldn't want to see that up against Kyrie and all the young blood in the league.
There's no question. And, you know, guys like KG and Kobe would love an opportunity to show those, you know, guys like Kyrie that, you know, Kyrie talks a lot of trash. I mean, he's great, but he does talk a lot of trash. And they would love to prove something. And fans would love that. Think about, like, the different age groups that would love that. You know, like the older generation would love to see Kobe go at it. And then the young kids would love to see Kyrie, Russell Westbrook, all those guys go. And it would be a great format. And, you know, there would be something on the line, as you said.
Exactly. And, you know, maybe you make like a 27, maybe you make 27 the cutoff age. 27 or under are on the young squad. And, you know, above that are on the vets. And you have maybe guys, some of the all-stars in the league coaching the teams.
Yeah. Have like guys like, you know, Durant coaching the kids and like LeBron and with the vets, and it would be just great to see with even like the events surrounding it. Like, there'd be some great media sound bites out of it. And why, like, the NBA needs to start doing stuff like that. You know, the NHL went to the Winter Classic. They scrapped, you know, the All-Star game basically and said, we're going to go with the Winter Classic, and think about how that turned out.
And that's the biggest hit of the year. The All-Star game needs some serious work. Josh, we love the comment. Keep listening, keep coming at us. In other news, Nier, I actually have some beef to pick with you. My co-host here, as you know, a huge method of sending out this cast is by posting it on Facebook, the Facebook. And Nier, last time I checked your wall, I noticed that you couldn't even muster up the 3.2 seconds it takes to throw this up on the book. What's the deal, dog?
All right, so just for all of our listeners, how it works here in the studio is that Rubes is not only the, you know, the host of this show, but he's also the technical director. And anyone that knows me is well aware of my technical deficiencies. And before we went to air today, we looked up my Facebook and found that I had posted it only to myself because I am not aware of these new Facebook privacy settings. So it says only to me.
Dude, we lost like three viewers because of that.
And you know what? That was completely on me. And it's been a recent trend. I've been noticing a lot of things that I've posted, you know, witty comments, things like that, have been posted only to myself. I sit around at home and I'm thinking, why hasn't anyone liked anything that I've done? and only to realize that it's been posting directly to myself.
You're feeling social isolation because your like game is off.
Completely
off. The lack of the Ballcast post, you know, it hurt. I was hurt deeply. And, you know, hopefully we're going to resolve that going forward. But, you know, we're going to jump right into our first segment. You guys know the deal. Around the league, kicking things off here, Nir. Let's do it up. We had some serious beef this past week in the NBA. We're talking triple A, medium rare steak here, dog. KG and Melo went at it all throughout their Monday night matchup during the 102-96 Celtics victory. KG said some questionable things, including potentially stating that Carmelo's wife, Lala Vasquez, tasted like Honey Nut Cheerios. After the game, Carmelo staked out KG at the Celtics locker room and waited for him at the team bus. Words were exchanged, the two had to be held back by security guards, and Carmelo was suspended for a game. So, Nir, let me first ask you, was the suspension of Carmelo Anthony justified?
It was, and I think, you know, the league has shown that they want to take the violence out of the game, and there was obviously, who knows what Melo wanted to do. Obviously, he wanted to just talk things out, but it didn't need to be done in that way, especially when he knew cameras would be around, security would be around. He could have just called KG like he did later on and dealt with it like how anyone else would. And but it's crazy to think, is this what these guys are saying on the court?
Yeah.
Honey Nut Cheerios?
What a ridiculous term.
Is this what everyone gets mad at KG about? Think about how many guys we've seen on the court just completely lose it. So KG must have some crazy things lined up for
him. He's got a whole bevy of ammo lined up. And, you know, the story gets even a bit weirder when today we just found out that James Dolan had some of his technicians miking up the New York Knicks bench on Sunday to hear what was being said to Carmelo, what Carmelo was saying. I mean, another crazy act from James Dolan.
You know what? He's an idiot, and he only feeds into that whole media circus in New York, and it sucks, because Melo has been in the middle of it for so long, and he's finally, you know what, taking this team on his back, and he just can't shake off this whole circus that is the New York, you know, firestorm. And Dolan, he's really, like, obviously I think his intention might have been that he wanted to know what was being said generally and maybe do some disciplinary action later on and tell the team, like, you know, these things can't be said around fans. But there are so many other ways to go about this. And to do that, I feel bad for Melo, because this guy, you know, say what you want, he is such a good basketball player, and he's really taking this team completely on his back.
I mean, back to the comments that were said, KG is the biggest shit talker in the league. We all know that. But at the end of the day, the Celtics won that game, and, you know, for as much shit as he talks, it kind of gets in players' heads sometimes.
And you know what? Like, it's worked for him. Like, think about how long that's worked for him. And, you know, you're right. At the end of the day, if you can back up your game to it, you know, Rasheed Wallace was doing it. You know, back
Ball
in the
don't
days
lie.
Ago, and he was getting under people's skin, and it worked because people get agitated. You saw Melo in that game. He shot 6 for 25 in that game, and obviously couldn't be all attributed to KG's words. There was great defense, but it got in his head, and he just couldn't shake it off.
One other thing I wanted to bring up about, you know, that game and MSG in general is that Paul Pierce had 23 points on the eve, and, you know, he seems to play his best in Madison Square Garden. You know, MSG is the mecca of basketball, and we've seen Kobe step it up there. And in some ways, it's kind of a home field disadvantage in that opposing stars bring their A game when they come into New York.
No question. LeBron, his best games have been in MSG. Kyrie has had some great games in MSG. You know, you're right. I think it really is, you know, that's why the Arcana Center is one of the harder places to play, because there is great home court advantage. Because
there's absolutely a horrible atmosphere.
Oh, horrible. The only thing the fans are looking for is free pizza at the end of the day.
Exactly. And 60 seconds of madness.
Yeah.
So moving on, Nir, the trade rumor was swirling this week around Memphis Grizzlies small forward Rudy Gay. Memphis is looking to rid themselves of future luxury cap hits. Gay is slated to earn $37 million over the next 2 years, and he's currently averaging a career worst field goal percentage and 3-point percentage, and his 17.9 points per game is his lowest since his rookie year. Reports had him in talks going to the Suns for a package around Jared Dudley and picks, and we've also seen his name dangled around the T-Wolves and Wizards. So, Nir, let me ask you, the Grizzlies have one of the strongest starting five in the league. They've won 4 games in a row. They're 24-10 and fourth in the West. Is it worth it to break up this team in favor of clearing up future cap space?
You know what? There were reports released that I think there's a huge disconnect between the front office and the coaching in Memphis. And it seems like the front office has admitted that they're not a contender with the team that they have, because they had this team last year and, you know, couldn't get over the hump. And whereas coaching believes, no, they've got, you know, the chemistry to go forward. So I really think this comes down to, it really, I think, is a salary dump more than anything. And they think that they can get a marginally good player for a huge discount that could contribute, you know, maybe three quarters of what Gay did. And a guy like Dudley is a great role player. And they were supposedly talks today with the Wizards about Bradley Beal being involved in the trade. And if you think about it, if the Grizzlies could, you know, snag a guy like Bradley Beal, who's 19 at a huge discount on a rookie contract, you know, it makes sense to the Grizzlies, you know, and it comes back to OKC, right? Like, the whole chemistry issue.
The chemistry issue, exactly. Look at what Boston did when they traded Perkins in that year when, you know, they had the best chemistry in the league. They had a starting five that was familiar with each other. Great record heading into the trade deadline. Shock everyone by trading Perkins, and they faltered the rest of the way. I mean, Memphis has had the same starting five for a number of years now. They took down San Antonio in that magical playoff run. That, you know, last year they had a solid performance in the playoffs. And I like chemistry, biggest X factor in basketball. You can't disrupt the starting five. I just see such negative repercussions for the team if they get rid of Gay.
And I think that's something the coaching staff acknowledges. Whereas the front office, they see it more in terms of...
John Hollinger.
John Hollinger, my boy. And he's obviously just looking at numbers. And I think that's what happened in Boston as well. You know, Danny Ainge kind of stepped in, and I think it threw off Doc Rivers. Because Rivers loved Perkins, and they had a great system
there. So did Rajon Rondo.
Yeah, and you could tell that similar situation happened in OKC, where front office kind of stepped in and just looked at the numbers and were looking at it more of a business perspective. And that's where you hope that Memphis doesn't do something like that, based like not on basketball reasons. I do think that Rudy Gay is really overrated for how much he's paid, but at the same time, you're right. I think he's an important piece of that team.
I mean, you know, we mentioned a guy that could be offered up for him, Jared Dudley. And, you know, speaking of Jared Dudley, the Phoenix Suns are 13-26 and have the second worst record in the Western Conference. I don't understand this team, because they have talented players like Dragic, Marcin Gortat, Dudley, Beasley. I mean, why can't they get it together down in Phoenix?
It's for me, I think it's coaching. And Gentry still hasn't figured out a good rotation for that team. You know, there are games he plays Dudley at the 3 or the 4, and then he switches in Brown in there, and he doesn't know what to do with his bigs. Gortat has been, you know, tossed around in terms of minutes. And something has to give in terms of, it's been clear that the coaching isn't very good. Like, Gentry is a great player coach, but doesn't seem like he's got the X's and O's down.
That's the thing. I feel like guys like Dragic and Gortat, who are really trying to find their niche in the league, you can't toy around their minutes. They need to have consistent minutes. And when Marcin Gortat sees Jermaine O'Neal, the corpse of Jermaine O'Neal getting minutes over him, that's going to ruin his confidence.
Oh, no question.
And when Dragic seen Seb Telfair coming out of the Brooklyn playground getting minutes over him, like, that can't be good for these guys.
No, not at all. And you know what? And especially when they've lost, you know, their leader in Nash. I think Nash played a huge role in keeping those guys, like, together, and they're, you know, staying positive, because he himself is sort of like a coach on the floor. And you look at, like, guys like Chris Paul, like, those good, strong leadership qualities in a point guard pay huge dividends for
young
players.
It's easy to forget that Nash was there last year. Like, this whole circus is here. Like, it feels like he was there so long ago.
Oh,
and
I know.
A team that's half a season removed from Steve Nash.
It's incredible. And they really haven't made any big splashes with players. So it really is just a team that's missing Steve Nash. And, talking about trades, another trade rumor that's been huge and circulating for some time has been with J.J. Redick of the Orlando Magic. The Magic beat the Clippers 104-101 on Saturday to end a 10-game losing skid. And a huge component of that was J.J. Redick, who had 21 points off the bench and has been having a career year for the Magic. You know, he's scheduled to become an unrestricted free agent on July 1st, and he's averaging highs in minutes, scoring at 14.5, and rebounding and assists at 4.5 and 2.3 assists per game. You know, this is a guy coming in with a lot of hype. You know, one of the greatest college shooters of all time. And he came in and was a complete pylon in terms of defense. But he's altered his game. He's worked on it. And now you look at him and you're like, this guy could be a great role player on a contending team.
We'd love to see him come off the bench as a sixth man. You know, he's bulked up and he can play some defense now. He's never going to lose that silky smooth shooting touch. So, I mean, if I'm a contending team, I'm going hard after J.J. Redick. I think he's a more valuable piece than a Jose Calderon because, you know, Jose is important, but he can't really play D. No. This is a guy who can shoot, who can board. He can play D now. He's going to be a good player on a team, although I honestly don't think Orlando's going to end up trading him. I think Orlando likes this guy, and, you know, they've given him this chance to succeed, and, you know, maybe they'll even look into re-signing him.
And you know what? Like, he's great. Like, his passing has improved. He's a guy that used to just come off the bench and shoot, you know, four or five threes and then go back onto the bench. And now he's handling the ball with Jameer. I would love to see him on a contending team. Because this guy, I look at him, and I remember years ago, I was mocking him. I'm like, this guy, you know, is completely overrated. He's just a shooter. And now you look at him and he's like, he's way more of a complete player.
I mean, J.J. Redick was seen as such a defensive liability that he was known as the modern-day human victory cigar, only entering the game when the outcome was entirely determined. But you look at his resume, this is a guy who started Duke. He's played in the most pressure-packed situations. You want a guy to excel in the playoffs? He's been there. He's been there in college. He knows how to play in these types of situations. So throw him in there. Let's do it. Anyways, we'll see where J.J. Redick and guys like Rudy Gay and Jared Dudley end up. But moving along now, Saturday night also marked the debut of a young stud in the NBA this season, the Washington Wizards' Jonathan Hildred Wall Jr., a.k.a. John Wall. He made his season debut, finishing with 14 points, 4 assists, and 2 boards in 20 minutes of action off the bench. So, in John Wall's 2-year career, he's averaged 16 points a game, 8 assists, and 4 boards. But he's also averaged nearly 4 turnovers a game and is a career 42% shooter. So, you know, what is the verdict on this player, and what can we expect from John Wall going forward?
You know what? He came into the league, and he was huge. He was huge. I remember watching him, and I was like, wow, like, you know, he was averaging 4 or 5 steals a game as well. And he was so quick, completely changing up what, you know, he really opened the door for guys like Kyrie to come in and dominate. And then injuries sort of plagued him. I went to a game in Washington, and I have to say, you know, the Wizards really have nothing else.
You went to the Verizon Center?
I went to the Verizon Center, which sucked. The crowd was awful, but you knew the only thing that they were rooting for was John Wall. Like, there's a genuine excitement when he's on the floor, and that's all the Wizards have. And I think it's almost a lot of pressure on him, more than, say, Kyrie in Cleveland, like, taking LeBron's shoes, right? Like, I think after LeBron left, like, Cleveland was accepting that they're going to suck for a couple years. There's, you know, this weird confidence in Washington that, you know, Wall was supposed to carry this team. And then they made these big moves, locking up Ariza and getting Nene, like, making these moves and thinking that they can be contenders.
Well, a huge part of his struggles early on was that bonehead culture in Washington.
Oh, yeah.
They had guys like JaVale McGee and Nick Young who are attempting to nurture John Wall into the NBA. These are horrible role models. So perhaps that contributed to his early struggles.
And it'll be interesting to see, because this is his first, you know, go with guys like Nene, like, you know, both healthy. And you know what? He was never a guy that had attitude issues. You know, he came up with DeMarcus. Like, him and DeMarcus are best buddies.
Yeah.
But they're completely different mentally. And I still think he's a hard worker. He's worked his tail off to, you know, rehab from his knee injuries. I'm more concerned that I just think that a guy like him really relied on his quickness. And we'll see if his, you know, knee injuries will, you know, hamper that in any way. Because he's not a good shooter. He never really was. He was a guy that would attack the basket, and that's where most of his points were. And so we'll see how that translates with the knee injuries. I'm rooting for him, though.
He's a likable guy, and, you know, right now the jury's out on him. We'll see how not only this season progresses for John Wall, but the rest of his career.
Look who they drafted last year. Vesely. Like, Jan Vesely, I think, has more fouls than points this season, which must be a record. And luckily they drafted Beal this year, who's looking pretty good. So there's some hope for the future, but that pick last year was awful.
I thought Jan Vesely was going to be a deep sleeper in fantasy this year, but in fact, he's just gone to sleep pretty much.
Yeah, I don't even know if he's in the rotation anymore. And he was a high draft pick.
And he also had a very hot girlfriend who he kissed when he got drafted.
And he came in with so much hype over that. Yeah. And you know, there were YouTube videos of all of his dunks. And you thought, okay, this guy's going to be great with John Wall running the court. And now you see him in... He's running right off the court because he keeps getting fouled out.
Unbelievable. Your Washington Wizards, ladies and gentlemen. Anyways, that's it for Around the League, folks. We're going to be right back in just a second. Don't move a muscle. All right, welcome back, everyone. We're here for our next segment, Agree or Disagree. We're borrowing this from our friends of the show at the BS Report. Nir, I'm going to give you a situation. You're going to tell me if you agree or disagree. So, to lead things off, we're going to talk about Kevin Durant and the Thunder beating up on the LA Lakers Friday night. KD had 42 points on 16 of 25 shooting to send the Lakers into a six-game skid and 11th in the West. Only two games ahead of the dysfunctional Sacramento Kings. The Lakers got a win yesterday, but nevertheless, the Thunder are rolling and the Lakers are reeling. Meanwhile, LeBron and D-Wade said that the Lakers' scrutiny this year is nowhere near what the Heat went through in 2010. Considering how much of this circus has been around the Lakers, how they're on, you know, the talk shows every day, Nir, let me ask you, do you agree or disagree with the following statement? The 2010 Miami Heat faced more scrutiny than the 2012 LA Lakers. Agree or disagree?
Disagree. And you know what? I think a lot of it has to do with we live in an age now more so than in 2010 where, you know, things like Twitter and Facebook have now, we're suddenly like there's 4 million people with different opinions and all scrutinizing whatever they feel they need to scrutinize. And the Lakers have been under that microscope. And the thing with the Heat was, you know, they started off slow, but then they picked it up and quickly started, you know, quiet all the naysayers. Whereas the Lakers have shown none of that. It's almost like they're feeding fuel to the fire. You know, there's reports that there's fights within the clubhouse. They had to fire a coach. Dwight, you know, like health has been an issue for the team. And whether or not Dwight will resign, like there's still question marks about their future. Whereas with the Heat, you know, quickly quieted down. Obviously, it picked up again, you know, in the playoffs.
No way. I'm going to disagree with you here. The Miami Heat did face way more scrutiny than the 2010 Lakers because they orchestrated this villain image in the NBA, and people wanted to vent about how disgusting this team was, how horrible was the way they came together, and the scrutiny. People enjoyed sending the scrutiny towards them, and you think about, you know, the scrutiny they faced not only from the media but from fans every time they went to an opposing arena. When the Lakers go to an opposing arena, there's no fan venom towards them. When the Heat went places, they were, you know, the place was packed, playoff atmosphere, everyone going against them. They faced way more scrutiny.
Yeah, but that, like, I think it was more toward LeBron than the Heat, whereas I think this is, like, toward the Lakers as a team.
But you also look at Chris Bosh being that little wimp third man out there, and you see, you know, this team that's just been put together, these three players in their prime, not going at each other, but joining forces. This wasn't even, it was a lot LeBron, but also the concept of the Miami Heat.
But you knew deep down that the concept of the Miami Heat was going to work. And I think that's where people hated that team. It was because they were like...
Did we know that? Because...
Look at the Lakers.
Well, look at the Miami Heat's roster. We didn't know, like... Comparable to the LA Lakers, a bunch of hacks. You know, it's a very similar situation. We didn't know that the Miami Heat team was going to work out.
But you look at the Lakers now, and you see you know this isn't going to work out. Now you're thinking, how do they try to put a Band-Aid on this situation? Like, do they trade Powell? Like things like that. Whereas with the Heat, you were kind of rooting for them to lose. But if you were a true basketball fan, you knew that at some point, something's got to give with these guys, and, you know, they would turn it around some way, and they were turning it around. And you look at these Lakers, though, they have given no indication that there's going to be anything turning around. If anything, I'm like, there's now really good writers that are writing about the fact that this could be a lottery team. And if that's the case, Kobe retires on a lottery team, Dwight leaves the team. You know, there's question marks like that. Whereas with the Heat, at least they locked up those players, and it could be diluted over a couple of years. And things would start, you know, you could maybe hope that, like, okay, they just need a year together.
The thing is, though, that with the Lakers, there was none of this predicting championships. They all admitted that they needed time to get used to playing with each other. There was none of this, you know, preseason celebration going on. That extra cockiness added by that Miami Heat team predicting not two, not three, not four, all that put the pressure on them that gave the scrutiny there.
I'll give, like, that was, that's completely
Nir,
true.
I will agree to disagree with you. That's all we got for that segment. Moving on. So Nir, big news coming out of Sacramento this week. The team's been in limbo for, you know, the past few seasons, really. Are they going to stay in Sacramento? Are they going to leave somewhere else? Maybe go to Anaheim, you know, maybe another U.S. city. And we heard news that a Seattle ownership group had offered the Maloofs $500 million in a package deal for complete ownership of the team. It was, you know, there was a lot of buzz going around. The deal didn't come to fruition. So, Nir, I want to ask you, do you agree or disagree with the following statement? The Sacramento Kings will be playing basketball in Seattle for the 2013-2014 season.
Agreed. I think...
Wow!
I think the Kings... You know what? If... For anyone that's followed the Maloofs, they are aloof, and they just can't get their act together. Every report that I've read is that they have to do something about selling this team, and, you know, Wojnarowski came out with a report that said that there was a group that was going to buy it from Seattle, and they were pretty much at the goal line before other reports are coming out that, you know, the mayor of Sacramento has reached out to a bunch of investors to try to keep the team in Sacramento. I don't think... You know, David Stern was asked about it, and he hasn't been very vocal. And I think that leads me to believe that even David Stern wants a move from Sacramento. And I think he's just fed up with the system that's there, like the ownership group there. And so Seattle's been, you know, working on an arena. I think they're ready to just pounce on a team. And the Sacramento Kings are that team. It's unfortunate because Seattle fans, this is what happened to them. And now they're doing it because, you know, Sacramento's got a great following, you know.
Yeah.
Might be small, but remember the cowbell days?
Of course.
And so it sucks for Sacramento.
Yeah, but nevertheless, I'm going to disagree with you. Do I want to see the Kings move to Seattle? Yes, I do. Do I think it's going to happen by the start of next season? No, I do not. In these situations, especially in the Sacramento situation, you have a mayor of the city, Kevin Johnson, a former NBA player, point guard with the Suns, who has fought so hard to keep that team there. And, you know, I feel like they're going to come up with another patchwork solution. Last time they were on the brink of moving, he basically pleaded to David Stern that they needed to keep the team there. They're going to come up with some sort of patchwork thing. You know, give us one more shot in Sacramento. I don't think it's going to happen by next year, but I would like to see it and do think they will move to Seattle in the near future.
Yeah, and you know what? You might be right that it might not necessarily be next season. I just think that, you know, they're going to go to the Board of Governors with this, and you know that the other owners are looking at this ownership group and being like, you're putting a stain on the NBA, like, franchise logo. And when they reach out to the Maloofs and say, like, please sell this team, you know, Seattle group is going to put in all the money that they can get now that the idea has been planted. Think about how many Seattle fans are getting ready for a team now. And also, being in Sacramento... You got to believe that the fans must just feel like crap at this point.
Yeah.
You know, why go to any of these games if you just know that this team is just going to
why invest money? Why pay money for tickets? Why
merchandise?
Why buy merchandise? Why buy this? Why buy the team's, you know, jerseys if you know that they're going to be gone? You know, it might be a nice vintage item to have an old cousin's jersey, but then you're probably going to burn it when they
yeah.
win. You know, it's going to be interesting to see. Hopefully, we'll see the Seattle Kings playing at the Starbucks Center in a couple years. Still sticking with the Kings, Nir, I'm going to ask you another thing about a man we've talked about a lot on this show, none other than DeMarcus Boogie Cousins. Now, the Celtics have made repeated inquiries into the Kings center. He's been a hot topic in terms of the trade wire because of his mentality, yet raw talent. The Kings reportedly say that he's unavailable, while he's gone on to have one of the best stretches of his career. In January, he's averaging 23 points a game, 13 boards, 3.3 assists, and 1.5 steals. So, Nir, I ask you, do you agree or disagree with the following statement? The Sacramento Kings will trade DeMarcus Cousins by the February trade deadline.
I have to disagree. I don't think he will be. But again, if the ownership group, like if things fall apart with the Sacramento ownership group, I can see them, you know, selling off Cousins because they might as well, right? And get some, you know, front office might just be like...
So you agree or you disagree?
But I disagree because I think Cousins' contract, he's still on a rookie scale contract. I don't see any team being able to match up in terms of, like, what can you offer in return for Cousins at that money value? You might have to then pair Cousins up with, like, someone with a hot, big contract in Sacramento. And it just, I don't think it makes sense. Like, for a team like the Celtics, for example, you know, they came close. They waived a bunch of their big men, hoping to clear up space for them. But who do you trade? I mean, they were looking at trading Avery Bradley, Jeff Green, Jared Sullinger, you know, some sort of combo package like that, and I just don't know if it'll fit. I do think DeMarcus Cousins needs a change of scenery, though.
You know, Anir, I'm going to agree to disagree with you and say that the Sacramento Kings will trade DeMarcus Cousins by the trade deadline because you know that he's going to have another moment where he loses his cool, and that will be the final straw. DeMarcus Cousins is averaging 2.4 head case moments per month right now, and that is unacceptable. He's been suspended twice. We saw him elbow Vince Carter in overtime of a game that his team needed him, and this bonehead goes out and elbows VC, gets ejected in the dying seconds of a game where your team needs you on the court. What kind of a team, you know, despite his raw talent, you know he's going to blow up again because of this horrible squad he's on, the horrible situation, and at that point, the Kings are going to look at this man and say, we need to ship him off, we need to sell high because he's playing well before he just loses his cool.
Oh, and you know what? It's almost like right now is the sell high moment because he's playing well, but it'll be interesting to see which teams come out. Like, you know, a team like the Celtics really need a guy like DeMarcus Cousins.
I can't wait to see what happens. Hopefully that head case gets in change of scenery. Last one here, Nir. Now we're going to shift gears over to New York, where the Brooklyn Nets have won 7 in a row, is it, since the firing of Avery Johnson?
I think they're undefeated in 2013.
Wow, so they seem to be playing with a new attitude and more poise. They cruise to a 22-15 record as of Monday night. The New York Knicks sit at 24-13, while the Celtics have won 5 in a row and are now at 19-17. So let me ask you, Nir, do you agree or disagree with the following statement? The New York Knicks will win the Atlantic Division.
Man, this one's a tough one. And you know what? I've thought about it, and I agree. I think the Knicks will win the Atlantic. And you know what? They've struggled of late. But if anything showed, like, you know, the team that they had earlier on the season, before injuries hit a bit, showed a team that, like, was going to easily win the Atlantic. And I think the Nets will continue to hit roadblocks here and there. I think they're hot right now, but and the same thing with the Celtics. I think the Celtics, their lack of size is going to hurt them down the stretch. I just think the Knicks right now are one the best coach team in the Atlantic and just overall have the talent to do it. Once they're fully healthy, I think, you know, Shumpert's coming back, once Felton's back, and Melo is feeling... I think Melo's still, you know, working off his knee injury. And so I just think they're the team to beat in the Atlantic still. It's going to be tight, though, at the top.
It's going to be tight. And, yeah, I'm going to disagree with you. The New York Knicks will not win the Atlantic Division. I believe that either the Brooklyn Nets or even the Boston Celtics could. You know, everyone's counting the Celtics out, but here they are, winners of 5 in a row. They actually have a lot of talent on that roster, and if they can get things together, Avery Bradley's back now. It's no coincidence that they've won 5 games in a row. Their defense, with him on the floor, is impeccable.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, you look at the Brooklyn Nets, the coaching change, Deron Williams is playing with a whole new mojo in his game. Joe Johnson's looking great. Brook Lopez is playing well. Reggie Evans is getting starters minutes. You know, they've got talent, too. And I'm not sure which of these teams could overtake New York, but it's going to be one of them.
You know what? But the thing is, we've seen it before with Deron Williams where, you know, he gets a coach out of town and then, you know, things turn around for a bit. And I just don't know if he has that mental fortitude to keep it going the entire season. He hasn't shown it yet. And that will be the X factor, I think.
Another huge X factor, sorry to interrupt you, but another huge X factor will be when Ray Felton comes back. Because this New York Knicks struggle recently has been with their, you know, near all-star point guard out, and they can't afford to have Jay Kidd playing 35 minutes a game for much longer because they need him for later in the season.
And Pablo Prigioni playing heavy minutes. Like, I've seen him in fourth quarter minutes, and I think that, and, you know, it comes down to, I think there was good rapport built between Felton, Melo, and Chandler down low, and I think they were all working well off of each other. And then Smith was able to work in a role where he just comes off the bench. Right now, they're putting him in a role where it's almost like, be a starter for
a bit. Be the man.
And, you know, he's great, but he's a little too much of an irrational confidence guy where that could spell trouble.
This is just an unbelievable Northeast rivalry that's brewing between New York, Boston, and Brooklyn.
Wow.
We're in for an insane, you know, second half of the season. We're so excited here at the Ballcast. So that's it for Agree and Disagree. We had a lot of fun in that segment. Let's take a look at the upcoming games this week. Nir, what do we have on slate?
So Tuesday night, we have the Clippers at Houston against the Rockets, which should be a great game. You know, two fast-paced teams. Houston, you know, is an incredibly dangerous team on the fast break, so that'll be great to see against Lob City. And then following that, we have Portland at Denver. And, you know, Portland's been, you know, talk about another team that's been hot this year. They've been on a roll lately, and they'll be facing a team, Denver, that, you know, still looking for that identity. So this will be sort of a tipping point game, you know, mid-season kind of game where it's just like, where is this team at for the rest of the season?
Wednesday night, we got Denver on the back-to-back in OKC. That's a tough stretch. Portland then into OKC. We got Memphis at San Antonio, rematch of that epic series we talked about a bit earlier. Maybe Rudy Gay will still be there. Maybe not. Who knows? And then, you know, Wednesday night, Miami at Golden State, another rematch of earlier this year when Golden State took down Miami in Miami on the Draymond Green layup, which I called you right after it happened and said, did you just see what Mark Jackson drew up out of the timeout? God.
Incredible stuff. And then the Thursday night game, the nationally televised game, is Miami at LA, which, you know, at the beginning of the season, I would have been super pumped about. But now I look at it, and it's just like, is this going to be another nail in the coffin for the Lakers?
And we'll see what happens. But, you know, the two teams we argued about, who's facing more scrutiny?
This will be sort of a media apocalypse game where I think Wojnarowski's head might blow up.
Brian Windhorst is going to explode.
Oh, he's just going to lose it. He's going to have way too many Twinkies going into that game.
Unbelievable stuff. Well, Nir, it's been a pleasure. Episode 9 is in the books. Hope everyone has a great week. We'll catch you on the flip side. Take care. Peace.
Thanks for coming out tonight. You could have been anywhere in the world, but you're here with me. I appreciate that. H to the Izzo, V to the Izze. For shizzle, my nizzle used to dribble down in VA. Was serving them in the home of the Turpins. Got it dirt cheap.